Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Wednesday, April 15th, and it is 9:05 A.M. With us this morning, Senator Kelly, Senator Hoffman, Senator Olson, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Bishop, Senator Machicki, and myself, Senator McKinnon. Co-Chairman Kelly is on his way to state affairs for other business but was here briefly. On today's agenda, we have SB 53, Advanced Practice Registered Nurses, SB 46, Municipal Bond Bank Loans to Regional Health Organizations, HB 140, Alaska Railroad Revenue Bonds, HB 158, Refined Fuel Surcharge, HB 161, Usable Durable Medical Equipment. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin today's business? Seeing and hearing none, I'd like to invite Senator Giesel, as well as her staff, Jane Conway, to the table for closing comments on SB 53.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I think probably everything was said yesterday, unless there's questions.
Are there questions from committee members on SB 53? The public hearing was open on 4/14/2015 and closed. We had several people testify in favor of the bill. It's an act relating to advanced practice registered nursing related to certified direct entry with midwifery and providing for an effective date. Any questions from committee members? Senator Machicki, can you do a walkthrough of the fiscal note again?
Yes, Madam Chair. I have one fiscal note from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. The appropriation is corporations, business, and professional licensing. The allocation is corporations, business, and professional licensing, and the OMB component number is 2360. The fiscal note for FY 2016 is $7,500 with zero on out to 2021. The fund source is $7.5, and that's the 1156 receipt services, and the change in revenues is $7,500, which means there's a zero fiscal impact. The division has identified areas where regulations would not be required and has reduced the note. And if the bill passes, the division will require $7,500 to cover legal costs to amend regulations, printing, and postage, but that is taken up by licensing fees for each occupation and set per AS 08.01.8065. So the amount of revenue collected will equal the regulatory costs.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Are there questions on the fiscal note? Senator Giesel, just to confirm, because we haven't let too much out of here with any general fund spending, there is no general fund spending. This is receipt collection authority for the division.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Senator Machicki.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 5329-LS0043-N from committee with the attached fiscal note and committee recommendations.
Is there any objection to moving Senate Bill 53? Seeing and hearing none, that bill moves from the Senate Finance Committee. Brief at ease. We're back on the record. The next item before the body is Senate Bill 46 regarding municipal bond bank and loans to regional health organizations. Senator Michikee, may I have a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 46, Finance 29-LS0447/I before the committee as our working document.
I'll object for purposes of introduction. Ms. Schein. Schein, do we need to have Devin Mitchell come to the table also?
Madam Chair, that would be wonderful.
Mr. Mitchell. Ms. Schein, if you could proceed with the walkthrough of the CS.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the Senate Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Erin Schein, and I'm staff to Senator McKinnon. The CS before you is similarly to the original bill, but the CS before you allows regional health organizations to utilize the municipal bond bank to assist them to provide health care facilities by providing capital funds through loans. However, there are a few changes. First, the CS before you lowers the amount from $250 million to $205 million total that the bond bank can finance for regional health organizations. Secondly, it allows for the bond bank to finance no more than 49% of any one project. In addition, the 49% bond bank financing is contingent on the balance, or 51% of the total project cost, being secured or delivered prior to bonding. And lastly, no single regional health organization borrower can access more than 50% of the $205 million bonding authority. In addition to those changes, the CS also allows joint action agencies to utilize the bond bank, and there are also some conforming and technical changes that were made as well.
Thank you, Ms. Schein. Mr. Mitchell, the joint action, if you could go into a little bit more detail. If the committee recalls, we had a public hearing. Trying to look when that was up. During the public hearing, we had a gentleman testify, Trey Acteson, I believe. He asked us to amend the bill to allow FEP out of Petersburg, Ketchikan, Swan Lake, the Joint Action Agency, to be declared a political subdivision, and that we had different agencies, like ADA would recognize their agency as a political subdivision, but that had a higher borrowing cost, and that under the bond bank, that there wasn't clear direction on whether they qualified. Mr. Mitchell, if I haven't gotten that right, or please help the committee understand what was testified and what position is taken in this piece of legislation, the CS before us.
So for the record, Devin Mitchell, Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank. I think you did get it correct. The joint action agencies, in my view, are similar to port authorities in as much as they're created by a conglomeration of municipalities in that instance, not delivering a port, but delivering energy to those communities. The board of the joint action agency is comprised of representatives of the municipalities that are involved in the organization, and so it's quite similar to a current mandate that the bond bank has.
Are there questions from committee members on the CS? Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mitchell, just a 30,000-foot level question. If any Alaskans have any concerns about the bill, the bonding, the entities involved, et cetera, can you alleviate any concerns that people may have? Is this an appropriate vehicle to do this, an appropriate method to do this? Any concerns that we should be thinking about from your perspective?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, if you're talking about joint action agencies specifically or the broader context of the bill?
The CS.
Thank you for the clarification. I think that the suggested changes alleviate some of the concerns that were discussed in this committee earlier in session, that the addition of the joint action agencies doesn't cause me any concern at all, because that's a very similar mission to what we're doing right now. It's an entity that we would, we already lend money to the region for electric generation cost, and this is just a portion of the electrical generation that's provided to the region of the state. As far as regional health organization lending, that is a new avenue for the bond bank. The CS provides some comfort in as much as there has to be 51% of the project funded from other sources, and so we're going to have partners in our borrowing. We're going to have partners in evaluating credit. We're going to have less exposure on a per loan basis and on a project basis, and so it I think moves the CS moves us towards a more secure and from the state's perspective piece of legislation.
Senator Denley,
would you characterize this as a low risk, high return? Meaning the benefits, the ROI. Can you talk to that?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy. Yes, I do believe, as noted in our fiscal note, the financial benefits to regional health organizations for any portion of their project financing that's accomplished through the bond bank is going to be significant. So on the total project that we discussed for the YK Health Consortium, you were talking about the potential for $100 million in interest expense that would be avoided by using the bond bank. And so if you were to reduce that to $100 million, you're still talking about tens of millions, $30, $40 million of avoided interest expense. So for the risk with the proposed partnership arrangement where we'll have additional eyes on credit and additional eyes or additional partners in the lending that to save those types of dollars for that minimized risk is reasonable.
You were referring to the entities, to the state itself. Is it a low risk, high return?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, I think I would defer that to Health and Social Services as far as the actual return to the state. I know that the project that we've discussed would increase the level of health care is the outcome of the project in the region, and to the extent that the state pays for costs through matching federal programs, those costs would be reduced.
Right. And then one more question. I apologize. I'm not being clear, and it's me. Low risk to the state itself in terms of risk of any type of having to step in for covering for the bonds or if there's not enough income. How would you characterize this? A low risk, medium risk for the state?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, it has to be low risk or there will not be a loan made.
Okay.
There has to be 100% expectation of loan repayment.
Okay, one last question. The addition to these other entities, the energy entities, any issues there at all from your perspective?
Through the chair, none.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Senator Michicki.
Yeah, I think maybe the question I would ask to help clarified that we're not issuing a bond. We're issuing the authorization for you to issue a bond, just a 30-second discussion about due diligence and risk evaluation would help the public understand that we're in no way authorizing the issuance of a bond. Maybe you can talk about your process a little bit.
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Michicki, the bond bank program is not a grant program, it's a loan program, and so we have a long history of making loans that have been repaid 100% of the time. And our process is such that we require an entity that wants to borrow from the bond bank to provide an application, and that application is reviewed by our staff and then by a third-party financial advisor. And then a recommendation on that loan will be reached. And oftentimes, in particular in scenarios like this, we'll talk about credit enhancements through structure of the loan itself to ensure that the loan would in fact be repaid. And if we can reach a point where we believe that's the case, then we make a positive recommendation to the board. And then the board, we have a five-member board that has to approve the loan. Nine out of 10 times they do approve those loans, but not often without discussion. And there has been occasion where the board has actually suggested additional work be done prior to a loan being entered into, and we've had to go back, do some additional analysis and go back to the board with that refined structure. And we have had applications that we've we try not to deny people outright, but suggested that there are alternatives that would be more appropriate for the level of risk that they're undertaking.
Senator McKicky.
A couple of follow-ups. Let's see. So with the inclusion of other financing partners, what would be your stand on where the state would be placed in order? That's just something that concerns me a little bit.
Through the chair, Senator McKicky, it'll depend on who those partners are in part, but certainly at least on a parity basis. A different partner, for example, if there were a commercial bank partner, perhaps they could take an interest in a building. We don't take a title interest in a building. We take we have a pledge of revenue generation of how an enterprise is going to act and how an enterprise is going to generate revenue rather than a title pledge. And so maybe a bank would be able to partner with that sort of an angle on the transaction with the Rural Development Authority, if we were talking about that as a potential partner. And if they were able to take a subordinated pledge to ours, then that would obviously enhance our position. Or if alternatively we could structure a loan where we, the bond bank, was the front part of a longer amortization, that again could reduce risk because we would be the first borrower out on what would ultimately be a longer amortization of a useful asset. And then potentially, I mean, if the RDA would be amenable to that, to taking a back-end position, is that, so if it was a four-year amortization, for example, and the bond bank had principal retire in years 1 through 20, and then the Rural Development Authority was 21 through 40 years, as that 40-year final maturity became 20 years and our bond was paid off, there would be a refinancing opportunity then through the bond bank because the RDA does not refinance loans. And so there could be a lot of synergies that are developed.
Thank you, Senator McKicky.
A couple more.
Senator McKicky, in adoption of the CS.
Ah, yes. No, I can wait. Thank you, Madam.
Is there objection to adopting the CS for Senate Bill number 46, Finance /I? Seeing and hearing none, the CS for Senate Bill number 46 is before us. Thank you, Ms. Shine. Mr. Mitchell, if you could stay there. If I could invite Senator Hoffman's staff, Ken Grusendorf, in the room. Senator Hoffman, we have a CS before us that's very different. I just wanted to provide an opportunity before we've got very far down the road for you to speak to the CS. The compromises that some might say are in the CS before you, and is this an acceptable solution to trying to provide an opportunity for the region of Bethel to move forward in a constructive way that protects the state of Alaska but allows an opportunity to follow through on a process that the Regional Health Corporation has come to you with?
Yes, I think that the CS does accomplish that. I think it puts an additional burden on the health corporation, but in talking with the CEO, Dan Winkleman, he believes that it does broaden the liability and reduces the exposure by the state of Alaska from the original 250 down to the 100 million. But they continue to be excited about the project and feel that they can accomplish what they originally intended. For the listening audience, this is something of great magnitude to a region of the state that has some of the highest cost of living, some of the lowest health care standings in the state of Alaska, which encompasses an area that's about the size of the state of Washington. What we're looking at is more than doubling the size of the current health facility that currently stands about 90,000 square feet. We would add another 130,000 square feet, and in the process add overtime, add up to 200 additional healthcare professionals, which will do three things for the region. Number one, it will provide construction of a major healthcare facility in the region, provide increased healthcare services, which will eventually improve the healthcare of the region, will provide the additional 200 jobs. As a result of those jobs, this will spur housing that will provide additional housing to the region. So with the state's participation, I think that this is a win-win for the state of Alaska and for the region of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Are there questions on the bill? Senator Dunleavy?
Just making sure, Madam Chair, we'll go over the fiscal note.
Senator Dunleavy, yes, we will. I have a couple questions from the old CS that I want to make sure are on the record, because there was some general fund dollars that were anticipated, and I want to make sure, because this committee has done a very good job in not asking for any additional GF funds. Mr. Mitchell, on the original version of Senate Bill number 46, during discussion, at least I have in my notes, that the municipal bond bank has a cash reserve to guarantee payments of loans for a period of time, and that at least under the original version, in my notes I have that you may need an additional $15 to $20 million of GF for your reserve accounts to balance what you have bonded. And I didn't know if that was your bonding authority or whether that was once you went in to begin to issue bonds. So can you give us the timing on a request of the legislature, given the tough economic times that the state is facing, a request for general fund dollars, at least in the capital budget, is not probable this year. This committee set out one of the lowest GF requests as draws on savings than many years, at least in this last decade. So can you help us with what the bond bank will need from the state of Alaska should we go forward with this request?
So the discussion we had about that related to the previous sizing, and so the reserve requirement increment would be diminished by the downsizing of the authority and the parsing up of the authority. But we've been thinking about that on our side in the interim since we last spoke as well. And while it would be great to have cash is king, of course, to put into the reserve fund and boost the assets of the authority, we have an alternative to that our reserve fund right now in our main program is a little over $50 million. And so we believe that we can buy what's called a surety policy for purposes of that increased reserve requirement and just pass that cost through to the regional health organization. So if our reserve requirement goes up, for example, by $6 million, we would buy a $6 million surety policy. The cost of that might be $200,000 or $300,000, so it's not insignificant, but we would just charge that directly to the regional health organization as part of the transaction.
Could you restate the surety bond cost that would be passed through to the requester of funds?
Sure. It depends on the size of the reserve requirement. I was just guesstimating $200,000 or $300,000.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure that I got it in my notes, which was where I got that last question from. Senator Dunleavy, any additional question on the general fund? I'm going over my old notes on the old CS.
Yes, I have some questions on the CS.
Senator Dunleavy.
So this would be directed at Mr. Mitchell. It's just to assure the people of Alaska. So can you tell me why you think it would be in the best interest of the state, as provided in this legislation, to give access to the municipal bond bank to joint action agencies when under AS 4245-300 they already have the powers of a public utility and are given access through ADA to have revenue bonds issued for their projects? Can you just talk to that?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Dunleavy. There oftentimes are many different alternatives that are available to entities, and they have pros and cons as you review them. And so in this instance, you're right, they do have an alternative. I believe the bond bank provides a lower cost alternative at this time. If you look back in the history of the evolution of the bond bank program, there was a time where we could not fund municipal requests for power generation. And those statutes were amended first to allow us the authority to provide for diesel power generation, and then subsequent to that, hydroelectric power generation as well. So there, as I said earlier, the consumers that are going to buy the power from the joint action agency that we're discussing are the same consumers that are buying the power from Ketchikan Public Utility that the bond bank already finances. And so the benefit of a lower cost of capital, if this alternative provides that, and it probably won't for every transaction, but where it does, if it provides a lower cost alternative, will go directly into the pockets of Alaskan residents.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
Along these lines, so does it seem to you that the state, or could it seem to one, that the state is putting itself into a position where its full faith and credit through the bond bank is now backing the project rather than the project pencing out to a level where revenue bonds could be used?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, the full faith and credit would not be pledged. It would be a moral obligation pledge of the state. But the use of that in this instance wouldn't be undertaken because it was the difference between them being able to afford the project or not. The joint action agency can adjust their rates and charges by action of the board. And so if they need to increase their rate, their cost of electricity because they need to pay a higher cost of capital, that's what they'll do. In this instance, they just won't raise, if they do use the bond bank because it was a more cost-effective alternative, they just wouldn't raise their rate, or it wouldn't be set as high of a level.
Okay, maybe you've answered this question, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
What is the present ceiling for the bond bank, aggregate or single project?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, the limit is $1.5 billion for municipal loans, and then there's another $87.5 million for a loan to the university for a power/heating project. So then we're talking about an additional $205 million authority in this bill. Of the $1.5 billion that we have for our general program, that has about $40 million of bonds that are paid off every year, and so we have automatically about $40 million of cap that's generated each year as outstanding debt is retired. And so we've seen a growth in that portfolio of about $70 to $80 million a year on average over the last 5 years.
And one more time, what was the figure for this approach? You gave me $1.5 billion, $87 million. What was the other figure?
Well, in the CS, it provides $205 million for the Regional Health Organization lending. So the main program is $1.5 billion.
Mr. Mitchell, if I might, Senator Dunleavy, the maximum on this particular bill would be $100 million, or right in that area. There's several hundred thousand on the other side of that, but the $205 limit was set on this approach for two reasons. One, to allow other regional corporations that had expressed interest to have some funding opportunity available under the same circumstances with the same creditworthiness to advance a project in other regions of the state. And as I understood it in a conversation with Mr. Mitchell, in creating a new pool, it was better to have more than one candidate in that pool as far as spreading risk under that pool. So in this pool, it's approximately $100 million for a single project, with a 49% minority ownership of that project. Is that accurate, Mr. Mitchell?
Yes.
Another question?
Senator Dunleavy, we have two other people in line, but please proceed. Senator Dunleavy.
Okay, and this may be for both Tim and Devin. On page 7, lines 23, 25. The language, this paragraph does not apply to bonds or notes issued to fund or refund bonds or notes. Allow the bond bank to exceed that aggregate of 205. I think that may have been clarified. It's 105 under this particular.
It's 50% of that, Senator okay. Dunleavy. No one single project can maximize the use of over 50% of the funds.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Mitchell, is that accurate?
That's correct, yes. In the limitations, Section 4, it has that $102.5 million limitation.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Senator Machicki, followed by Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Just wanted to clarify on page 7, lines 23 through 25, that the paragraph on the limitation does not apply to bonds or notes issued to fund or refund bonds or notes. I'm a little bit concerned that does it mean the blood bank could refinance debt in addition to the $205 million, which was not issued by the bond bank originally?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, that language mirrors language that's in Section C of the statutes currently for the main program of the bond bank, and it was not the intent of the inclusion of that language here to provide for an extra limit above the $205 million for refinancing opportunities. It's intended to allow for the mismatch between a potential refinancing and the paying off of outstanding bonds. There can be a multi-year differential between when a bond is refinanced and when it's ultimately paid off because of call dates in the future. So it's an advance refunding situation. So you might wind up with more than $205 million of bond bank bonds outstanding, but whatever exceeded $205 million would essentially be secured by a irrevocably pledged escrow held by a third-party bank. So we take them off our balance sheet. They're still outstanding, but that's the intent of that language. And I actually went over this language earlier, and a plain reading of it does imply that exactly what you suggested, and so I think it's important to put it on the record that that is definitely not the intent and hasn't been the interpretation or intent of the language in C to be able to exceed the hard cap and statute for a refinancing program.
Thank you, Senator Machicki.
Thank you. Separate question, Madam Chair, Mr. Mitchell, the Regional Health Corp. from the YK has some pretty substantial funds and a permanent fund, which made me somewhat comfortable if that would be a consideration in your due diligence and evaluation. Is that something that you consider as being potential collateral in this issuance if you get to that point?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki. So, the balance sheet of an entity is going to be involved in the consideration of the loan. Of course, those assets aren't specifically pledged. We would be more interested. They will be pledged to the extent that there's a revenue pledge of the organization, but they could choose to do something else with those assets, is my point. We're more interested in the ongoing viability of the organization and the organization's ability to cover this debt in addition to its current operation, and that's typical of any revenue enterprise borrower.
Madam Chair, follow-up.
Senator Machicki.
So, the only thing that's a little different about this is a healthcare facility of that size in Anchorage, Alaska. If there were an issue, it would remain very marketable. I venture to say that something of that size, quality, and value might be somewhat more difficult in a place like Bethel. Does that change your evaluation, location, and potential future value of that asset when you're considering whether or not this package would be executed?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, the value of assets don't typically, and the saleability of assets don't go into our analysis as they would if you were going to have a title interest in that building and the building was a form of security for the loan. because we make school, we make loans for schools or roads or other assets that may not really have a value if you were to even have the ability to take possession of them. We're again more interested in the ongoing viability of the enterprise generally, and YK Health Consortium as an example is a much broader organization than just the hospital in Bethel.
Mr. Mitchell, this is this particular funding is available for regional health corporations or any private health corporation?
Through the chair, it's regional health organizations as defined in statute.
Thank you. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Devin, I want to go back about 10 minutes ago, and you said something, and I just want to get it. I'm going to make a comment, and I want you to either agree or disagree with me. You had made a comment to Senator Dunleavy's line of questioning. This could put more money into the pockets of residents as it making reference to the power project. And I'm assuming what you meant was by the lower cost of borrowing, the utility would then pass that savings on with lower rates to the consumer. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Are there any further questions from committee members? Mr. Mitchell, thank you very much. Mr. Grusendorf, any closing comments for the committee to consider before we review the fiscal note? Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Machicki, if you could walk the committee through the fiscal note.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have one fiscal note for Senate Bill 46. The department is Department of Revenue. Appropriation is Taxation and Treasury. The allocation is Treasury Division, and the OMB component number is 121. The appropriation request for FY16 is $15,000 in travel, $375,000 in services for a total of $390,000. The out-year cost estimates, is this would... FY17 is where the 390 would be spent, and then from FY18 through 21 is $2,000 a year for services. There is no estimated supplemental FY15 cost, no estimated capital cost, and this authorizes the Municipal Bond Bank to consider making loans to regional health organizations. This will be the first time that this has been authorized to lend money to an entity that is not a political subdivision of the state. The costs were derived, assuming that $125 million of bonds would be issued based on this authorization in FY15-16. We have to adjust some numbers here, but essentially all costs incurred associated with the issuance of the bonds will be charged to the regional health organizations and paid from the proceeds of the bond issues of the regional health organizations. And if project financing are more rapid than anticipated or slower, the associated costs will flow to earlier or later years as they are 100% driven by bond issuance activity.
Brief at ease. Senate Finance is back in order. It's 9:45, and the same Senate Finance members are at the table. Senator Machicki.
As I noted for the record, Madam Chair, these numbers need to be updated with a fiscal note.
We'll call Mr. Mitchell to the microphone if he could proceed, if you could review the second fiscal note.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Second fiscal note is the Department of Health and Social Services. The appropriation is Medicaid services. The allocation is health care, Medicaid services, and the OMB component number is 2077. Fiscal note is indeterminate for FY16 through 21 for operating. No estimated supplemental 2015 or estimated capital 2016. And essentially, the department cannot gauge a level of interest in such a municipal bonds offer may garner from tribal organizations, and thus costs for this bill are currently indeterminate.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Mr. Mitchell, I know that you'll issue a new fiscal note for us, but if you could highlight the changes that we can expect to see.
Yes. I think Madam Chair, is that how you address you? Madam Chair. I would expect the fiscal notes services line to be diminished by some percentage similar to the diminishment in the size of the issuance authority, and potentially even further because we don't expect all of our authority to be used as immediately as we might have under the original scenario that came before the committee with the limitations on 49% project funding. So probably an extension of those expected potential costs as well. The other cost that I referred to early with a surety policy, I'll have to discuss that with our folks about whether or not that would be a cost that we would want to include in our services line, because we would require the borrowing entity to fund that directly out of a cost of issuance account, and whether or not that was a cost that we would say was ours or we would just say it was theirs. I can explain that in the fiscal note that we anticipate that being an undertaking, but not sure how it will affect the fiscal note yet.
Thank you. Mr. Mitchell, can you talk to us? Is there any cost associated with, in the CF, adding the joint action agencies?
Madam Chair, I don't expect there to be any significant adjustment to the bond bank's cost because of how we undertake our bond issues. We combine various issuers together, and so, for example, our next sale in May will have, what is it, 6 communities and 10 loans that are all combined together, and they collaboratively fund something. So the incremental piece of adding one additional borrower to that is fairly minimal. So we could come up with an expectation based on the plans of the joint action agencies that we're aware of, but it would be modest.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. Are there any additional questions on the fiscal note? Mr. Mitchell, thank you for joining us again at the table. Brief at ease. We're back on the record. We have the CS for Senate Bill number 46, Finance, /I, before the committee. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to thank the committee again for hearing the legislation. I think this is a unique opportunity for the state of Alaska to participate in financing that will improve the health care in rural areas of the state. Much of the responsibility for health care for people in rural Alaska, primarily Alaska Natives, has fallen on the federal government. The federal government has participated vastly in health care in rural Alaska. And this is still the case today with this project, but through this legislation, the state of Alaska will be participating in providing financing in a limited capacity. This legislation has been, the limits have been reduced quite substantially, but still a large sum of that risk is going to be borne by the state of Alaska, and it will improve health care. The state of Alaska and regional corporations participating in trying to improve health care to many rural residents throughout the state, and I appreciate the committee's support.
Any further comments? Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to echo Senator Hoffman's comments and thank the committee. And the CS, I'm totally satisfied with it. It's a good compromise, but also not only for our regional hub to have this addition of medical services provided out there and all the other good things it does for it, but it also has the opportunity for some of our smaller clinics in our more rural communities that feed the hubs. And I think it's a good piece of legislation. I'm happy to support it.
Additional comment. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. First of all, I want to thank Senator Hoffman for putting this forward, having practiced out in the five rural hospitals and having been harnessed by the lack of equipment, the lack of facilities. I can remember one thing that comes to my mind when somebody had a bad cut himself with an axe pretty good in his foot. I was at the village at the time, and one of the suture sets, the only one that they had already been opened, so the sterility had already been compromised, and so we still had to sew them back together, but it was one of those that you had to cover them with antibiotics to make sure you didn't get more infected than what was there. So I think with this kind of a bill, this kind of equipment, this kind of facility, we are making large advances in trying to make sure that the morbidity and mortality rate is answered out there in rural Alaska.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Any further comments? Senator Machicki, may I have a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 46, Finance, 29-LS0447, /I, from committee with the attached Hess fiscal note and forthcoming Department of Revenue fiscal note and committee recommendations.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, the CS for Senate Bill number 46, Finance, /I, an act relating to the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority, authorizing the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority to issue bonds or notes for a regional health organization or joint action agency and providing for an effective date, moves from committee. Brief at ease. Senate Finance Committee is back in session. The next item before the committee is House Bill number 40. Passed action. We heard the public, we had a, held a public hearing on 4/10/2015, and the public hearing was closed on the same day. Representative Thompson, Jane Pearson, if you could approach the table, identify yourself, and provide the committee any closing comments on House Bill 140.
Thank you, Chair McKinnon. I'm Steve Thompson, State Representative for House District Number 2 up in Fairbanks. And with me is Jane Pearson, my Chief of Staff. House Bill 140 is an authorization for the railroad to sell $37 million worth of bonds. The reason for the bonds is to continue installation of a positive train control that is required by the railroad safety nationally. It is to make sure that trains don't overspeed and collide, derail because of excess speed. And this requirement would allow them to continue to have passenger service. At no time, this is for $37 million. The entire project was $158 million. Through different grants and different bonds that they've done, they're down to $55 million in need. This would give them $37 million of the $55 million that they need. At no time is the credit or bonding ability of the state of Alaska involved. The state of Alaska would not be liable for any of these bond payments, as would railroad would not either. The bonds would be paid for with Federal Transit Authority funds that are received yearly from the federal government. And any questions?
Other questions from committee members?
I have one comment, Madam Chair.
Senator Machicki.
Rep. Thompson, I appreciate you bringing this forward. I realize we don't have a choice. Just for the record, I want to state I think positive train control in Alaska is an irresponsible, unfunded federal mandate counter to all reasonable metrics related to any substantive reduction of public safety risks.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Senator Dunleavy? Brief at ease. Back on the record. Senator Machicki, can you walk us through the fiscal note?
Yes, Madam Chair. Senate Bill or House Bill 140, the department is not applicable. The appropriation is the Alaska Railroad. The allocation is Alaska Railroad. There's no OMB component number. The total operating from FY16 through FY21 is zero. Estimated supplemental 2015 cost is zero, and there's no capital cost for FY16. It simply authorizes the Alaska Railroad Corp to issue revenue bonds to finance the implementation of positive train control. All costs related to issuing the bonds will be paid from the bond proceeds and are included in the $37 million authorization. And in no event will the general credit of the State of Alaska or Alaska Railroad Corporation be pledged for the repayment of these bonds.
Any questions on the fiscal notes from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, Senator Machicki, may I have a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 140-29-LS0699/A from committee with the attached fiscal note and committee recommendations.
Is there objection to moving House Bill number 140, an act authorizing the Alaska Railroad Corporation to issue revenue bonds to finance a positive train control rail transportation safety project that qualifies for federal financial participation and providing for an effective date? Seeing and hearing none, House Bill number 140 moves from committee. Brief at ease. We're back on the record. The next item before us is House Bill 158. It may look familiar to you. Senator Machicki had a similar bill before us earlier in the session. This is refined fuel surcharge. Senator Machicki, may I have a motion to introduce the CS?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 158, Finance 29-LS0608/F before the committee as our working document.
I'll object for purposes of clarification and changes in the document. Ms. Shine, if you could walk us through the changes in the CS.
For the record, my name is Erin Shine, and I'm staff to Senator Anna McKinnon. This was a drafting error that we caught after we had adopted the previous CS. I can't give you a line number because it's actually the labeling of the bill. If previously it said the Senate CS for House Bill number 158, Finance. That was incorrect because there was a CS adopted in the House. So it's the Senate CS for House Bill number 158, Finance, and that's the only change that is in this bill from the previous version that we adopted yesterday.
Are there questions from committee members? Seeing or hearing none, I'll remove my objection. The Senate CS for the CS for House Bill number 158, Finance, /F, is before the committee. It's an act relating to refined fuel surcharge, relating to motor fuel tax, relating to qualified dealer license, and providing for an effective date. If I can invite Representative Munoz to the table and her staff, Crystal Kieneman. Any closing comments on the CS before us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I want to thank Senator Machicki for his work on this issue. It's been a pleasure to work with you on drafting the bill, and I'm happy that we're at this process in the session where we can get the bill to the floor soon. I've gone over the changes, and I'm comfortable with the letter of intent language as well as the change in the surcharge amount from one penny to 0.95 of one penny. And I'm here to answer questions if there are any questions.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Machicki, will you walk us through the fiscal note?
Yes, Madam Chair. For HB 158, the department is fund transfers. The appropriation is OPSIS DGF transfers, non-ad. The allocation is the oil and hazardous substance release prevention account. The OMB component number is 2499. The FY16 total operating is $7,450,000. It increases approximately 2% a year from to FY17 of $7,600,000 and graduates to FY2021 to $8,200,000. The change in revenues matches, Madam Chair. As you'll notice, there's no general fund cost. And the estimated supplemental FY15 cost to cover that shortfall is $800,000. The bill implements a surcharge on sales of refined fuel and identifies the resultant UGF revenue as available for appropriation to the O&H fund. It's not a dedicated fund. It requires appropriation. And there's a table that shows the projected cash flows and fund balance under the assumption that $800,000 will be deposited for FY15 and $7.45 million is deposited in the O&H fund in FY15 and FY16, respectively.
Are there questions from committee members? Just to highlight... the OMB component 2499, the capital budget that left this body, I believe, had the $800,000 in it. Just putting that on the record that was taken care of there, and there was a short funding in the FY15 budget. Any further questions on the Senate CS for the CS for House Bill number 158, Finance? Seeing and hearing none, Senator Machicki.
Madam Chair, I move the Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 158, Finance, 29-LS0608/F from Committee with attached letter of intent, fiscal notes, and committee recommendations.
Is there any objection to move this item from committee? Seeing and hearing none, the Senate CS for the CS for House Bill number 158, Finance, /F, an act relating to a refined fuel surcharge, relating to a motor fuel tax relating to a qualified dealer license and providing for an effective date moves from committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Brief at ease.
Thank you.
we're back on the record. The last item before us is HB 161, usable, durable medical equipment. On 4/13/2015, we opened and closed the public hearing. We had several members of the public testify in favor of the CS for House Bill number 161, HESS, an act relating to the purchase of durable medical equipment under Medicaid and providing for an effective date. If I can invite Representative Gaddis to the microphone, identify yourself for the record, and please provide the committee any closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Representative Lynn Gaddis, and I represent District 7, the Greater Wasilla area. And to recap, House Bill 161 is a cost savings bill for the state of Alaska. It allows the Department of Health and Social Services to purchase used or refurbished durable medical equipment where the department currently only purchases new medical equipment. And quite frankly, the durable medical equipment are things like crutches, wheelchairs, walkers, things of that nature. So, quite frankly, this results in a substantial savings for the state and gives them that opportunity to purchase used equipment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, Senator Michicki, can you walk us through the fiscal note?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have one fiscal note. Department of Health and Social Services, the appropriation is medical services, the allocation is health care Medicaid services, and the OMB component number is 2077. Total operating from 2016 through FY 2021 is zero. There's no supplemental FY 15 cost and no capital cost. The bill simply establishes that when the department authorizes the purchase of durable medical equipment, the department will require the recipient to purchase used or refurbished equipment under certain conditions. There is no additional cost to the department to implement this bill.
Are there questions on the fiscal note? Senator Michicki may have a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the committee substitute for House Bill 161, HESS. 29-LSO636/H from committee with the attached fiscal note and committee recommendations.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, the CS for House Bill number 161 HESS, an act relating to the purchase of durable medical equipment under Medicaid and providing for an effective date, moves from committee. Brief at ease. Back on the record, is there any other items to come before the committee? Seeing and hearing none, I'd like to announce that the agenda for this afternoon will be HB 26, extending direct entry midwives, HB 116, extending alcohol beverage control board, pending referral, HB 176, repeal state employee salary, HB 178, workers' compensation medical fees, pending referral, SB 50, ADA, bonds, programs, loans, and LNG project. Pending referral, HB 106, uniform, child support, and parentage. It's 10:15, and the Senate Finance Committee is adjourned.